reach an operator, please press star zero. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Thursday, October 11th, 2007. I would now like to turn the conference over to Andrea Denny. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you. Anne, can you get the slides set up?
Sure. Can you see slide two?
Yeah. Thank you. Can you close the dialogue box? Thank you. Welcome, everybody. My name is Andrea Denny. I work at the U.S. EPA in the Clean Energy Environment Program State and Local Branch. What our clean energy environment programs are support to state and local governments to promote cost-effective clean energy strategies that benefit the environment, energy, public health, and also provide economic benefits. We have two main programs in our branch, the Clean Energy Environment State Program, which supports state governments, as you might have guessed, and we also have a Clean Energy Environment Municipal Network, which is very new. It's less than a year old. We're still developing a lot of our materials, but our mission is to support local governments, which includes cities, counties, tribes, regional planning associations, councils of governments, and kind of anything that fits under the rubric of local. We have a fairly generous definition of that term. You can see the main website of our programs. I certainly encourage you to go ahead and look at those. While we are a clean energy program, we are also a climate change program, and clean energy is probably the best way to target climate change. When we say clean energy, we do include energy efficiency, renewable energy, distributed generation, combined heat and power, and some other cost-effective, environmentally friendly strategies. As we've been working on clean energy, we've seen increasing interest in climate change as an aspect of clean energy policy. It's becoming more and more integrated into energy planning. Our programs are seeing increasing interest in and questions about how to track and reduce greenhouse gas emissions. So we wanted to design this webcast series to provide some basic background and answer some of the questions that we're getting about greenhouse gas inventories. These webcasts are really very introductory. They're just meant to provide a background on greenhouse gas inventories. You're not going to come out of them being an expert and knowing how to use any particular software. We really would like to encourage you to pursue your education on greenhouse gas inventories further through trainings that EPA offers, through trainings from ICLEI Cities for Climate Protection Campaign, Energy Star trainings, and reviewing and reading a lot of materials that are available online. And at the end of this presentation, there's a slide with a number of URLs that you can look to for more information. Could I have the next slide, please?
Sure.
I just wanted to quickly go over a few logistics. Some of these you've already heard from our operator. Your phone lines are muted. We have quite a few people on the line, and to avoid chaos that might ensue if you all had, if we all had all your background noise, we have muted the line. We are asking people to use the question and answer box to submit your questions. We will have someone reviewing the questions and consolidating similar questions, and we'll ask them during a question and answer session at the end of the presentation. There is a feedback to presenter option that you can use. We ask you to please use it sparingly. But if you are very confused by a certain point, you can change your color to purple, and if we see that a number of people are confused about a particular slide, we will try and clarify further. We are recording this presentation. We'll notify participants when that recording is available and where. And we do welcome your feedback after the training. You can email me. It's denny.andrea@epa.gov with any questions or comments or follow-ups. I'm actually going to turn over the rest of this presentation to Anne Choate. Anne is a Vice President for ICF International. She has a long experience working on greenhouse gas emissions and inventories and reduction strategies for states, municipalities, the National Park Service, Environment Canada, EPA, the Department of Defense, and the Federal Highway Administration. She's been working with EPA on state-level greenhouse gas inventory methods since 1995. She's done extensive work with the California Energy Commission on their greenhouse gas inventories and other work. She's the lead developer on the EPA state inventory tool, which some of you may be familiar with, as well as EPA's waste reduction model and the climate leadership in parks tool. And I also just wanted to mention that here at EPA, we have a number of other experts available on the line who may be able to answer some of your questions as well. And those people represent ICLEI. I believe we'll have someone from the U.S. Conference of Mayors joining us. And then on behalf of EPA Energy Star, EPA Climate Leaders, and the National U.S. Greenhouse Gas Inventory. And with that, I will turn it over to Anne.
Okay, thank you, Andrea. And I just want to thank all of you for participating. It's a humbling experience to be in the role of presenter, but I hope that some of the information that we can provide today will help to shed some light on the inventory process and maybe answer some of the questions that you may have had, and that this is just sort of, this will kick off this series of webinars that EPA is going to be hosting, and will sort of encourage some healthy dialogue and information sharing. So with that, I'll just provide an overview of what we're hoping to accomplish today. The intended audience are, as you know, regional, state, and local government representatives. And then the goal of the of this first session is really to clarify and review some of the fundamental issues that are related to developing an inventory. In terms of this presentation, this is just an overview of what we're planning to cover, starting with the purpose of an inventory and all the way through sort of how you review your inventory results in context and what the timelines and level of effort might be. First, and the most important question is why would one want to prepare an inventory? And some of the reasons for preparing an inventory are listed here. Obviously, one of the main reasons would be to identify the greatest sources of greenhouse gas emissions within a geographic region, to understand trends in emissions, to quantify the benefits of specific activities that result in greenhouse gas emissions, to provide a basis for developing an action plan or a mitigation strategy, to track progress at reducing emissions over time, and to set goals and targets for future reductions. But I would say that's probably the main goal is that, and you've probably heard this before, is that it's very hard to manage what you don't measure. And so the inventories are often used as a way to measure those things that we might try to manage down the line. Then the next question is sort of what kind of inventory is appropriate, or what kind of inventory would you need to prepare? And there are several types out there. There are multi-state inventories, state inventories, regional inventories at the Metropolitan Planning Organization or COG or RPA level, and then local inventories, many of which are coming out about as a result of the cities for the Mayor's Climate Protection Agreement and the cities that have joined on to that, and then corporate inventories both at the entity level and also at the project level. And I'll get into that a little bit more in a minute. And one of the main questions that comes up with people who are just getting into this field and trying to figure out how they can navigate the waters is what's the difference between an inventory and a registry? And so the next couple slides try to address that issue. The first important thing to point out is that an inventory is designed to account for greenhouse gas emissions that are emitted and removed from the atmosphere over a specific time frame. And the intention is that these inventories would be transparent and easily reproducible, and they would follow established accounting guidance, whether it's the IPCC guidance, for example, for national inventories, the EIIP guidance for state inventories, or the WRI-WBCSD guidance, for example, for corporate inventories. And that's not an exhaustive list. That's just some examples. And so, you know, one example of a greenhouse gas inventory that's very important right now in California is the greenhouse gas inventory that they've prepared. And actually, we were involved in an inventory from 1990 through 1999, but the CEC recently updated their inventory. And this graph shows some of the findings. And here's basically what you try to find in a greenhouse gas emission inventory is what is the magnitude of emissions and how do those emissions break down both by source and by gas. And you look at that over time if you can so that you can start to see trends. Now, distinctly different from a registry. And a registry is more of a way to organize and collect information and collect inventory information, recording the greenhouse gas emissions or the emission reductions that have been achieved. The scope of registries is highly variable depending on the purpose of the registry. The timing, for example, whether it's an annual registry, a periodic registry, or just a one-time reporting of reductions that were achieved, for example, through a project. Registries can be voluntary or mandatory. The reporting could be done at the project level or at the entity level. And then there's variation in the degree of verification for registries. Some registries have no verification, others have self-verification, and others have require third-party verification. And just to provide another example, there's the California Climate Action Registry, and that's distinct from the California Greenhouse Gas Emission Inventory. The Climate Action Registry is a collection of 301, I think is the current count, total registry members, and each member is conducting and submitting their own inventory in keeping with the protocol for the California Climate Action Registry. And just to get to the heterogeneity of the registries that are out there, what you find is that the design of any individual, any given registry, is dependent on the purpose of the registry. If the purpose of the registry is to report on emissions or to provide a comprehensive review of emissions or just to calculate emission reductions, then you're going to see different levels of detail required. And that's what this table tries to get at. When you do design an inventory, one of the most important upfront questions is one of boundaries and what the physical and the organizational boundaries of your inventory are going to be. It may be that you're developing inventory within a certain geographic region, so for example, the state of California or the city of Toronto. And then there may also be opportunities for the development of an inventory where you're looking at emissions within a certain entity's control. So maybe you're going to create boundaries around your inventory that reflect the municipal operations within a county or within some level of some government structure. And as I mentioned earlier, there are oftentimes project-level inventories or accounting estimates that are provided, and that's when you're just trying to look at what the incremental benefit of some specific project might be, but you're not conducting a full-blown inventory. Then getting into boundaries, when you're working on an inventory, it's important to think about the end-use sectors that you need to model and to what extent you need detailed information inventory estimates at the, for example, municipal level or the commercial level or industrial or residential. And so thinking through what those operational boundaries should be before you conduct the inventory will help down the road when you're trying to use the inventory. Then thinking about direct versus indirect emissions, there are opportunities to calculate emissions from direct emission sources, and then also opportunities to calculate emissions from imported electricity, for example, which would be an example of indirect emissions. So if you are in a region where you generate electricity that is sold outside of your region, those would be direct emissions that could be calculated in your inventory. However, if you're in a region where a lot of the electricity that's used is imported from outside of the region, you need to think at the outset when you're developing that inventory of what the share of the electricity that's used or consumed within your region is that's imported, and then figure out how you're going to be able to estimate the emissions associated with generating that electricity. And electricity is an interesting case because when you think about electricity, there are no greenhouse gas emissions associated with the point of use. The emissions actually occur at the plant where the electricity is generated. And so, you know, what we found in a lot of the local inventories that they're going to include emissions from imported electricity, because that's often one of the things you have the most control over, and so you want to know what those emissions are so that you can think about ways that you might reduce them going into the future. In the state context, we, in the EIIP guidance, which governs those state emission inventories, we've encouraged states to calculate emissions from imported electricity, but to avoid double counting across states, we've asked states to keep that number separate and in the body of the inventory for them to just report on generation. And the idea there is that you don't want to double count generation that's happening when some of that generation may be used in-state and other of that generation might be used to supply power to an adjacent state, for example. Another area where direct versus indirect emissions is relatively important is in the area of waste management. And the question here is whether you're going to whether your inventory is going to capture greenhouse gas emissions associated with how the waste is managed within the boundaries that you've established for the inventory, or whether you're going to look at emissions of waste generated outside of that region. So if the waste is collected within your region but then exported, is your inventory going to calculate the greenhouse gas emissions associated with the management of that waste, even though it's happening outside? And again, this comes up because this might be an area where, for example, a municipality would have control over the quantity of generation or the composition of the waste, and it might provide opportunities for emission reduction. So if the inventory doesn't consider the emissions associated with managing that waste, even though it's outside their boundaries, it undermines their ability to then basically track emission reductions in that area over time. Another interesting area, which is usually of interest in the private sector, is whether an inventory should get at product use or supply chain related emissions. There are some companies who may not emit many greenhouse gases in their direct operations, but the activities that they engage in relate to some greenhouse gas emissions that are happening throughout the supply chain, and in some cases those emissions might be quite significant. So these companies are starting to think about not only their immediate carbon footprint, but also what are the greenhouse gas emissions associated with the stages of the product supply chain, or with the products that they use. For example, if they're using paper, are they using paper that has recycled content, or could they be doing things in their purchasing strategies to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions? And obviously those emission reductions would happen outside of their immediate direct emissions. They would be essentially indirect emissions outside their control. So thinking through some of these issues it's an important part of designing an inventory up front. And similarly, thinking through the emission source categories that should be included is something that comes up, and it's the list that I have here reflects some of the main source categories: energy, industrial processes, solvent and other product use, agriculture, land use change and forestry, and waste. Now, this source list could be broken out into many, many more subsources, 50 or 60, and you could obviously collapse it to drop out some source categories if they weren't appropriate, for example, within the geographic region, for example, of interest. But this gives you some idea of some of the source categories, and any given inventory would attempt probably to at least address emissions that are material within each of these categories. Another topic that comes up is the issue of which greenhouse gases to include. And here there's just a table showing the list of six that are included in the IPCC guidelines, and then those same six are included in the EIIP guidelines. And then the Cities for Climate Protection covers CO2, carbon dioxide, nitrous oxide, and methane. So this isn't to say that any inventory should cover or shouldn't cover any particular gases, but just as an idea that the guidance for conducting inventories at various levels have you know, different thresholds, and depending on your specific circumstances and the specific emissions that are within your control or within your region, you might want to consider those factors as you're trying to decide which emissions to include. So moving on to the next slide, there's an important aspect of quantifying greenhouse gas emissions, and it relates to the nature of the data that you're going to be using. And so just to start off with, what do I mean by top-down and bottom-up? Top-down data tends to be data that's compiled by some agency or some office that's attempting to provide information for specific geographic areas on an annual basis, for example. And one good example is just the EIA, the Energy Information Agency, has a state energy data report. And they provide fuel consumption by fuel type by state. And so that's a top-down source of information on fossil fuel combustion by state, by fuel type. And we've used that as a default in the state inventory tool that Andrea mentioned earlier. And it's a very good source of information on fossil fuel combustion. Now, there are many states who agree with a lot of the fuel consumption estimates that come out of the state energy data report, but there are often some fuel types or some end-use categories that states have better data, where states have better data. And so, for example, in the state inventory tool, we allow you to go in and to make, you know, to enter your own data if that's the case. And so top-down data tends to be more accurate, but there are certainly cases where states may have better data, and so where states, for example, would want to use that data instead. And this is sort of an extreme example because I'm talking about the EIA's data on state fuel consumption. And my example for bottom-up data would be sort of taking data on electricity use from utility bills and or other sort of locally provided sources of information. But depending on the level of inventory you're doing, top-down versus bottom-up, it may have a very different meaning. So top-down data at the level of a municipality might be getting data from a utility. And bottom-up data in the context of a local inventory might mean figuring out, you know, how many refrigerators there are per household times the amount of electricity those refrigerators use and calculating the emissions that way. And so the idea with, whether you select a top-down method or a bottom-up method, it'll largely be dependent on the availability of the data and then, again, the purpose of these estimates. What do you plan to use these emission estimates for? The top-down estimates might be more accurate, but they may not provide enough detail that would allow you to assess mitigation strategies. So, sort of in an ideal world, what you would like is to have disaggregated inventory estimates so that they provide information for the most important end uses or subsectors and fuel combinations, so for example, gasoline and passenger cars, so that you could track those emission inventory estimates in comparison to values that you could generate using bottom-up data, for example, number of cars and vehicle miles traveled or miles per gallon, to estimate the benefits of an emission reduction measure. So if your inventory provides detail down to the level of emissions from gasoline and passenger cars, then you'll be able to track those emission estimates over time and to compare whether they are in fact being reduced as you implement measures that, for example, might reduce greenhouse gas emissions from gasoline and passenger cars. So often it's some sort of a hybrid approach that you're trying to go for, attempting to get disaggregation in the inventory that will allow you to track emission reductions and probably using more bottom-up information in a subsequent stage if you're thinking about mitigation strategies. Moving on to the next slide. One of the important things to think about here, and I'm realizing as I talk to, 100 and some people who are muted on the phone and can't, ask questions, but this is a pretty complicated issue. It's an issue that has, there are a lot of nuances in how you select the boundaries, how you design the inventory, how you select the data. And so thinking about the 80-20 rule actually is really important here because people can get hung up on the inventory piece of just developing the inventory in the first place can be such a daunting task that it could it can put people off. And so one of the things that's important is to realize that much of the inventory work that's been done over the last 20 years has really been intended to learn about emission sources or to satisfy treaty obligations. But as a result, we have a set of protocols and methods that are really, really good at supporting mitigation strategies and actions in specific sectors or source categories. But in general, some of those methods are not particularly desirable for inventories that are intended to support sort of a higher level sort of strategic planning or policy analysis. And so one of the challenges when you're developing an inventory is figuring out where you need to invest your inventory resources and get into those levels of detail and where you can streamline. And it all links back basically to the original question that I asked, which is, why would you perform the inventory in the first place? If you're performing the inventory because you know that you need to reduce emissions and you want to know what the main source, what the most important sources in your region or in your state or your county or your city are, well, then you need an inventory that's going to give you that that picture, which, here's an example for New Mexico, but you need an inventory that's going to give you that picture of emissions. And then you need to figure out where you're going to focus your resources on getting disaggregated emission inventory information that will allow you to track any future activities to reduce emissions, for example, in those sectors. So then once you've decided to develop an inventory, then you need to set a baseline. And setting a baseline it sounds like a very basic step, but actually figuring out what your baseline is an important step. And I think, I said think it through because I think oftentimes people don't think about how the baseline data are going to be used. And so if you think about the purpose of the inventory and you think about how the baseline data are going to be used, is that what you're going to be using as a benchmark to compare progress going forward? Are there anomalies present in the baseline that you're using? For example, what we found when we did the California inventory, we were looking at a period of time that was from 1990 through 1999. And when you looked at emissions over that period, if you were to take the change in emissions over time, you really saw a very small number. I mean, it was a very small percentage. And yet we knew that emissions in California had increased over that time period. And what you saw if you graphed it out and sort of thought through the sources of emissions was that there was really a peak in 1990 in the greenhouse gas emissions in California due to there was a drought, so there was less hydropower, and there were some other sort of military activities that were causing higher emissions. And so basically we saw this peak in 1990, then the emissions dipped down in 91 to 3, and I think 93 was one of the lower years, and then started to pick back up and had, increase up to 1999. And so one of the important things to think about was if you set 1990 as the baseline, it was going to be sort of, it would be an uncharacteristically high year. And so we needed to understand what the reasons for that were before we could explain the emission results and then think through emission reduction options in California. Another question to ask is how the regulatory or the voluntary efforts that are proposed or that are in progress might affect your baseline or your future emissions. And here maybe you have an industry sector who's saying we're going to reduce emissions voluntarily by 20% by 2020. And if that's an industry that's really important in your within the boundaries of your inventory, then it would be important to think about how their baseline and how their voluntary reduction target might relate to the baseline that you select. Then also, will the baseline be compatible with baselines that are being used elsewhere? If your inventory is going to be one of several that are used in some sort of regional planning activity, maybe it would make sense to think about coordinating the baselines. Or are the data, well, this is getting to the last bullet, but are the data available for the year in question? Sometimes getting data for 1990 is hard to do. And so you need to think about whether the data are available and what quality those data are. And then finally, this level of disaggregation, which I think I've touched on. Next, it's important to think about engaging stakeholders. Stakeholders tend to be, a lot of people think about stakeholders in the context of action planning, but in particular, stakeholders may be helpful in providing data to the inventory effort, in helping to establish a baseline because they know what data is available for what years, they know what databases exist, and they may know the quality of the data for various years. They may be able to contribute some personnel resources or databases or provide some sort of outreach assistance so that you can collect the data that you need. It's important, I think, to try to get their feedback on some of your decisions so that they're bought into the process and so that maybe down the line they'll be bought into any subsequent planning activities. Here, what we've tried to include is a table that basically provides an overview of the methods and the tools that are available for developing inventories at various levels. The national inventory follows the IPCC guidelines for national greenhouse gas inventories and the good practice guidance. And it's not a tool, but the obvious product related to that is the national inventory, the inventory of U.S. greenhouse gas emissions and sinks. And that's prepared annually by EPA. And then on the state level, we have the state inventory tool, which EPA has developed, and the EIIP guidance. The tool is listed under methods only because the tool is actually, it has a companion user's guide which provides some information on the calculations and the methods that are used to quantify greenhouse gas emissions, and those user's guides are actually more up to date than the guidance itself, which hasn't been updated in a couple of years. So if you're interested in knowing about methods for quantifying greenhouse gas emissions at the state level, I would suggest you look at the tool and then the user's guides as well, in addition to the EIIP guidance, which provides a lot more detail, but as I said, some aspects of that guidance are out of date at this point. At the local level, ICLEI's Cities for Climate Protection guidance and software is available and has been really successful in helping a lot of local governments take this on, and then there's their software, the Clean Air and Climate Protection software. Another tool that's out there is Portfolio Manager, which I think some others could speak to more maybe during the Q&A, but local governments can use Portfolio Manager as a way to track energy use, energy costs, and carbon emissions of each of the buildings that are within their portfolio. And so the idea there is that, maybe some local governments would like to start with that. And so you could start by just trying to track that kind of information and then expand out from there. Then, just as an example, you've got a corporate inventory methods are outlined in the WRI protocol, and then there are a set of greenhouse gas emission calculation tools, and Climate Leaders has protocols that are intended for companies to follow in quantifying greenhouse gas emissions. And I'll let others on the phone speak more to these, I think, during the Q&A session. So when it gets down to developing an inventory, now we've figured out what the boundaries are, the scope, we know whether we're doing an inventory or a registry, we understand which level of disaggregation we're interested in, we have the methods, we have the tools. Some of the issues that are going to come up are related to data. And so, again, data availability is key. Understanding, what data is out there and what data quality you know, what the data quality are and what data quality is necessary for the purposes of your inventory. Here I've mentioned again this bottom-up versus top-down issue, which I think I covered earlier. Thinking about how the data is collected, whether it's collected, is the data on fertilizer consumption within your county, is it available through some national service? And in fact it is. And then figuring out whether that data is more accurate or less accurate than locally available data. And then thinking through the level of verification for various data inputs. And then also thinking again about this issue of scale and thinking about whether the data that you're looking for is at the entity level, at the state level, at the national level, and then how you might be able to use some of the data that's available at your level by doing some sort of apportioning or trying to figure out a way to take, if there aren't data available, for example, for some sort of refrigerant use, would it be reasonable for you to take the national estimate of consumption for some sort of refrigerant and apportion it to your county or to your city based on population? Would that be an appropriate way to quantify, to get basically a back of the envelope calculation of emissions from consumption of that refrigerant, or is that inappropriate? And to think about, where it's best to just leave it out of the inventory because the data aren't available, and where you're just trying to get an idea, so maybe it would make sense to try to get a back of the envelope calculation. Certification. The issue of certification, well, first of all, certification is what we mean by that is it's a third-party review of the methods and the underlying data within an inventory. And the purpose of certifying an inventory is to ensure that the inventory is of a high quality and that it's complete, consistent, accurate, and transparent. And so there are several protocols for certifying inventories. Some of them are listed here. This may not be as important for some of the local government participants on the line, but it's an important thing to think about. And as you try to sort of navigate the waters of what an inventory is and what level of rigor you're trying to implement within your inventory, it's important to not forget about certification and the types of certification that are out there. And then another important thing that I think is a good way to review your inventory results is to think about your inventory results in context, to compare those results to other state and local governments, and you can do that at the state level. State inventory summaries are available on EPA's website. We've provided the link here. You can also do order of magnitude checks. You can think about emissions from a particular sector and think about how they compare to other states or counties or cities, to how they compare to others. And maybe you need to normalize based on the number of people within the region or the number of cars or the gross state product or some of these other indicators that might help you to compare emission estimates that you calculate with emission estimates for the same sources or sectors or gases in comparable regions or organizations. And then finally, there's a tool that WRI has come out with, the Climate Analysis Indicator Tool, which I think also would provide the opportunity for states, for example, to go into that tool and to see how their inventory results stack up against emission estimates at the state level for other states. Okay. The timelines and the level of effort for developing an inventory are all over the map. One of the reasons that EPA developed the State Inventory Tool was because I think EPA recognized that developing a comprehensive greenhouse gas emission inventory for all 30 or 40 individual source categories was quite time consuming, and just understanding the guidance and the methods took a lot of time. And so that's one of the reasons that EPA developed the State Inventory Tool, to help make sure that states weren't reinventing the wheel in terms of their spreadsheets each time they were developing an inventory, and they they were able to more quickly get up the learning curve and more quickly generate mission estimates over a full time series rather than having to work through, you know, a long guidance document just to come up with a mission estimate for a single year, for example. So the availability of tools certainly reduces the amount of time that's needed. But other important factors in the timeline would be the availability of data and the vintage of the data, the reporting requirements, and any sort of reduction commitments. If you have a reduction commitment that's being put out by someone, you know, whether it's a mayor or a governor or whomever, and you need to have this inventory in a certain time frame, obviously, I think that provides the impetus for a lot of people to all of a sudden focus much more than they might have otherwise on the inventory. So maybe the timeline will be, you know, accelerated. The level of effort in developing an inventory, as you would expect, is certainly dependent on the human and the economic resources, the availability of data again, the level of detail, so the number of gases, the number of sources, the level of disaggregation, the data that's available and provided by key participants in the region and the state and the locality. If you have key stakeholders or key emitters within your area who are saying, you know, we're willing to provide you the data, we've got it all right here, obviously, that'll help a lot in terms of minimizing the level of effort needed to develop the inventory. And then here again, I mentioned this, the 80-20 rule, and trying to make sure that you invest the limited resources that you have in the areas where it's going to make the most sense from the standpoint of why you're doing the inventory in the first place. On this slide, we basically tried to provide, this is an incomplete list, but it's a list of resources that may be of interest as you think about greenhouse gas inventories and try to basically get your hands on some of the important tools or methods that are out there. And I'm sure we can talk about some of these during the Q&A. I just would like to point out that this is our first webinar in the GHG Inventory 101 series. And so we'll be looking forward to your feedback, but we'll also be hoping that folks will be interested in the second and third sessions. The second session is designed to talk about how you would translate inventory results into action and really getting into the uses of greenhouse gas inventories, including, you know, benchmarking, tracking your progress over time, identification of major sources, setting targets, exploring mitigation options, and action planning. And then the third one we're expecting will be in November at some point, and that will be specific to the state inventory tool and will provide training on the state inventory tool. So I think with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Andrea, and if anyone has feedback on the session and or questions or comments that we aren't able to address here, I've provided Andrea's information at EPA on this last slide.
Thank you, Anne. I would encourage people to use the question and answer box. I have been seeing some questions come in, and we'll start addressing those questions in just a minute. I did just want to give Alex from ICLEI a chance to talk about very briefly about the cleaner climate protection software that most of the local governments are using and some of the other resources ICLEI can provide to help local governments with inventories.
Thanks, Andrea. My name is Alex Rammel, and I'm with ICLEI Local Governments for Sustainability. Real briefly, we are a membership organization. Our members are local governments around the world. Here in the United States, we've got about 300 members, representatives of many of which are on this call. I recognize a few names at least. The majority of the work that we do in the U.S. is the Cities for Climate Protection program. About 80% of our effort is dedicated to that. The primary benefit that we can offer to local governments in this question of how to conduct local greenhouse gas inventory is the Clean Air and Climate Protection software tool that we provide to our members in conjunction with the Association of Clean Air Agencies and the EPA. And this is a tool that's essentially a calculator linked to a database of emissions factors that's tailored specific to the needs of local governments. So it's essentially the easy way around having to develop all of your own spreadsheets to do this kind of an inventory. Those of you that are interested, we have just recently produced sort of a 15-minute demo video that sort of features the software and all of the options and uses of that tool. I'm happy to send that to anyone who is interested. In addition to providing the software, we also do routine monthly software trainings for our members that are sort of a follow-up to the great information we've just heard, sort of digging one layer deeper into the how to collect this data and how to enter that information into the software and use the tool. And then, of course, we also offer all of our members, local government members, hands-on, one-on-one technical support as needed. So as you kind of go through this question and you go through this process and you come up with specific questions, we're there on the other end of the phone to provide as best an answer as we can. Is it possible for me to have my email address appended to the follow-up email that's going to go out after this call, so that folks will be able to contact me if they're interested in learning more about ICLEI or receiving a copy of that demo video?
Sure, I think we can take care of that for you, Alex.
Great. Thanks, I'm happy to answer any other questions that come up during the question and answer session as well.
Thanks, Alex. And I just wanted to add two very quick points to that, because I did see one question come in. Yes, the CACP software is available free to state and local governments, although the training is not available free to non-members of ICLEI. And also, we talk about CACP a lot for local governments, but a number of state governments have also used it to do state government inventories and look at different mitigation strategies and use it to analyze mitigation strategies separate from using the state inventory tool to look at the comprehensive statewide emissions. So just wanted to mention that it can be a very useful tool for state governments as well. And with that, I think we can begin the question and answer session.
Lauren and Adam, you've been fielding the questions, and it looks like there are a number of questions related to the presentation.
Yes, hi, Anne. Can you hear me?
Yes.
We had a few questions here, and one of them actually is, can you talk more about the plans and progress for developing a protocol for regional inventory work, i.e. at the metropolitan level, and what are some ways that activity data and fuel consumption data can be calculated at the regional, county, or municipal level?
Well, it's always good to start with one of the challenging questions. This is an issue this is Andrea at EPA, by the way. This the issue of regional inventories is becoming more and more important, and we're getting more and more interest in it from RPAs and MPOs and COGS. So we are beginning to investigate some ways that we can develop some at least rough estimates for regional greenhouse gas numbers to look at regional planning. And we're just getting started on it. It's probably going to be a little while before it happens. There are some local governments some regional associations that have started to look at it that are probably a little bit further ahead than we are here at EPA. And we are planning to tap into the progress they've made and the lessons they've learned. We're looking at possible ways to scale down some of the state data to the regional level, or to possibly use some of the data that's collected for state implementation plans, and see if we can use some of that data to come up with some metrics for greenhouse gas inventories. What we'll probably do is try and come up with some different approaches and then compare them against completed inventories at the local or regional level to see if we come up with similar results. Other than that, it's probably a little too early to really go into more detail than that, unless, Anne, you have anything to add.
No, I think that sounds like a great answer to me. I think that there certainly are some source categories that will be much easier to quantify at a regional level than actually within the county, and certainly easier to tackle from a mitigation standpoint. For example, some of the transportation-related emissions would be, you know, can make more sense to tackle that at a regional level than within a county, for example, or within a city. And so we have been talking about this a lot and trying to think about how we can leverage some of that data that's already being collected and converted over basically to greenhouse gas emissions information that could be created for an entire region or broken out to individual counties within a region. So, and I think, as Andrea said, we're sort of at the pilot stage of that. So, I guess, Adam, are there some other questions? One I saw a lot of questions about the presentation itself, and just in case other people who haven't written in are wondering, we've recorded this presentation, and we will be sending out a copy of the slides, you know, along with that recording, and we'll send that announcement out to everyone who's on the phone. And then Adam or Lauren, do you have, are there some other questions that came in that we should try to address?
Yes, one of the participants asked that they understood that ICLEI is trying to suggest a more recent baseline year, such as 2005, in part because it's much easier and allows more resources to be directed to action. And Alex, you might be a more appropriate person to comment on this as far as what ICLEI is suggesting.
Sure. Our historical advice has been that you should try and develop a set of baseline year that's as far back in time as you can get reliable and accurate data for. So when we first started doing this a number of years ago, the goal was to have everybody in alignment with a 1990 baseline. That's really not possible in most cases now. I think we still would suggest that we want local governments to try and set a baseline that's at least 5 or 6 or 7 years in the past. The main reason being so that you can sort of count the benefits of actions that have been taken subsequent to the base year. So we sort of say, this is your baseline year emissions, and a business as usual trend would have had you increasing a little bit each year, but because of actions that have been taken, it's held steady or it's declined. The second piece to that, and I think what the question is specifically referring to, is this idea that we're hoping that we can begin to establish common baselines among our members, and this is really for comparative purposes. And the idea is here is that as local governments, a lot of our members are re-inventorying, doing a second year.